KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer. And for the rest of this hour, we're joined by actor Beatty Wong. The San Francisco native won a Tony Award for his performance opposite John Lithgow in the Broadway musical M. Butterfly. He's also well known for his portrayal of a forensic psychiatrist on Law & Order, Special Victims Unit, for many seasons. And now he's returned home to San Francisco, where he stars as a country doctor in ACT's production of The Orphan of Zhao. It's an adaptation of a classic Chinese legend about self-sacrifice, honor, loyalty, and revenge. Beatty Wong, welcome to Forum.
Howdy, thanks.
Let me just ask you a question about the pronunciation, because is it Zhao? Say then.
It's Zhao, yeah. It's like it's a version of the traditional Western J sound. It has a little bit of a D in it, like a DJ sound, a little bit of a Y, Zhao. I do not speak Chinese, but have tried to wrestle myself into a place where I can pronounce it comfortably.
Okay, good.
There is actually just trivia. There's actually no such thing as the Zh sound in Chinese. And a lot of people say Beijing or Zhao, the Orphan of Zhao, which is actually not correct. But
yeah.
That's just a, you know.
Good.
Nobody's going to
kill
you.
Wanted to clear that up.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what was it like to perform, make your ACT premiere in front of the hometown audience this week?
It's everything that I kind of dreamed it would be. I grew up going to the Geary stage and seeing plays at ACT. My wonderful drama teacher, Zora Chanis, who was a really seminal relationship in my whole life, took our class there. I went to Lincoln High School in the city, and I was an aspiring actor even as early as high school. And so being invited by Carrie Perloff, the artistic director of ACT, also the director of this production, to the Geary stage is very meaningful to me. And it's very meaningful to my family. My mother is going crazy with the running. You know, she's just going the whole nine yards with –
What is she doing?
She's having dinners and inviting people to the show very proudly and in a very humble way. She's not a boaster or a person who brags, but she is very happy. She's always happy when her sons are all together, and my brother has come down from Seattle, and my San Francisco brother is here, and so we're all together, and that's very meaningful to her.
And talk about the differences of being on stage. You've done, of course, film. You've done television. What's the difference for you?
I think there's two main differences. The first difference is, of course, the lack of or the presence of the camera itself. The one thing that changes is your relationship to the audience. In the television or film, you have that in what I would describe non-judgmentally as an impediment between you and the audience. So you're not having a kind of spiritual experience, a personal experience, processing the audience's reception of what you're doing. You definitely do have that in the theater. And that is a substantive difference for me. The other thing is that the performance itself is more physical and encompasses your entire body. When you're on stage in a play, you have to convey to the last row of the house a feeling, a revelation, something that happens. And it often has to happen in your body rather than just in your eyes or your face. And you have to remember that when you're in a television show or in a movie to turn your body off in some ways.
Because the camera exaggerates everything.
Yeah. And you'll look like a crazy person if you use your shoulders or your body or your and that's the great thing about great stage actors. When you see a performance and you're not even aware they're using their body, but they're conveying emotion, feelings through the use of their body or physically in some way, even just the turns of their head or all of those kinds of things.
Yeah, you say you had a drama teacher in high school who was instrumental to you. How often did – it was a woman, yes?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Mrs. Chanis.
Yeah. Yeah. How often did she get to see you perform?
She did get to see me in M. Butterfly, which I think is my great happiness. And she died very young. She died soon after she came to New York to see me in M. Butterfly. And I think that was the main thing that she saw me in. You know, up until that time, I hadn't really been anything big. And she was a big theater goer. She came to New York to see plays. And so this was one trip. She came to New York to see her old student in a play. And that was really a big deal for both of us.
It seems, you know, there's the arts in school, public schools have just taken such a beating in terms of funding. And arts classes really have taken a back seat to other things. Have you been involved at all in, you know, promoting the arts in public high schools in particular?
I have been. You know, I'm on the board of an organization in New York called Rosie's Theater Kids, which is was started by Rosie O'Donnell and is a organization that takes musical theater specifically to fifth graders and upwards to through high school, and gives them an opportunity that they never had before. And it's actually quite a life-changing thing to witness. I grew up at a time when there was funding being cut, but I think even now it's so much more intensely neglected. And not still, here we are talking about whether it's really important as civilized people to include the arts in everything that we do. And it's a shame that we have to keep arguing that.
Although San Francisco is one of the places that actually uses city money to fund the schools.
Yes.
They don't have to do that, but voters have chosen to, and the board of supervisors and the mayor have chosen to do that.
Yes, and in my hometown reunion with my own high school, I was able to witness how thriving the drama program is and how the equipment and all of the everything has been renovated and everything. So that it's promising in that regard.
Let's talk about your portrayal of this country doctor, Cheng Ying, who's placed in a kind of a Sophie's Choice kind of a situation where you have to sacrifice your own son in order to save the last heir of this noble clan. It's the emperor's grandson, right?
It's the emperor's grandson, yes.
His daughter's his son.
Yes.
And it's a very complicated story, but what drew you to the role?
I found the role it's a wonderful play. It's based upon a fourth or third or fourth century Chinese kind of story that has lasted the test of time. It's very popular in Chinese literature and Chinese theater, and for a good reason. It's extremely juicy. It's full of intrigue and revenge and political machinations, and the heart of it is this man's dilemma of what to do, because this one child represents an entire clan which has been massacred, and the play hinges upon the idea of revenge, and that child needs to get his revenge upon his clan's enemies. The way that he is able to survive is that this doctor, who's thrust into the middle of the situation, ends up substituting his own child for that child, because that child has been marked to be killed. So then his child gets killed, and he lives a lifetime of suppressing his feelings about how what that means to him, and also being a real agent in the actual revenge taking place as a result.
And he's, in a way, a tragic hero, but haunted as well. And,
yes.
And the audience, you have to put yourself in the shoes of the doctor. I mean, can you as a person, you know, even fathom such a thing?
I think no, I cannot. And I think that it is the thing that makes the play extremely wonderful for the audience, is that asking oneself the question of whether what you would do in this particular situation, which is charged politically, and it's not the same, it's a very different time period. But if you can try to imagine a situation in which there's such a corrupt government that all people are being massacred, and you know this of course is still happening today in lots of different places of the world, and how you are as an ordinary person have an opportunity to do something to change that situation, would you take that? Would you take the hit for this greater good? It's a huge question. We're asking it every day, you know, on Facebook and in our social media life about, things like animal cruelty and all. What are you going to do as an individual for gun control or all of these things? We bemoan so many things, and yet we're very rarely given an opportunity as ordinary people to be guaranteed you can make a real change. And if we could do that, if we had that magic pill that we could take, would we take it?
And you, talking with B.D. Wong, the actor from San Francisco, who's performing in the new ACT production of The Orphan of Zhao. And if you'd like to join us, the number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email your thoughts to us. It's forum@kqed.org. You yourself are a dad. You've got a son who is, what, about 14 years old?
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Jackson Fu Wong.
That's right. That's right.
And born prematurely, his
yes.
twin brother didn't make it.
That's exactly right. You're very good with the research.
And tell me how all of that, if it does, plays into this role that you have as this father who's faced with this excruciating decision, and how that plays out for you emotionally.
Well, it's very difficult to talk about. I mean, I don't, and partly it's difficult to talk about because I don't like the idea of actually people coming to the show and thinking that I'm thinking the things that that you're talking about. But I am, and I don't know how I can accurately describe the acting process, but the acting process must always include one's own feelings about anything in order for it to be authentic. And so one has to kind of dig down deep and go to that place where one is equating one's own life and pain and the things that have happened in one's life with the ones of the character that you're playing. So I do that, and it's something that allows me to be able to do the play, but it's not particularly the funnest thing that you can do. My feelings
about... But you could have said no to that role. I mean, was there something about that dynamic in your own life that made you, you know, weighed one way or the other in the decision to take it on?
It was a very easy decision for me to make. Carrie offered me the play. I read the play, and I was very moved by the play. I did relate to this guy in the way that his emotional journey is very intense, and I have felt some of those feelings that he feels. And I was having an invitation to do the hometown thing, which is a huge thing for me and my family. And so I jumped at the chance to do it. I mean, I think also when if you're an actor of you know, any kind of seriousness, you would embrace the opportunity to embrace that pain and to play that part because it's a great part. I know that I wouldn't say that this is a part that that is dangerous for me to play because of the emotional thing that I have to go through. And I think there are parts for people that are other actors that are you know, it's not great for them to go to that place because they haven't processed or healed themselves fully from the event that they're using to do the part. But in my case, while it's uncomfortable and many times and has been sometimes really painful, I think that it's something that I do in my life. It's something that I do which is to use one's emotions, and it would be a waste in some ways. When you think of yourself as an actor because you are supposed to be an actor or that you've been somehow called, I'm not sure if I believe in it in those kind of mystical ways, but I do feel like it's the one thing that I do that I'm supposed to do. And so I took it on, and it would be rather silly to push that away.
Has your son seen the performance?
No, he's going to come. It is, as you mentioned, a co-production with the La Jolla Playhouse near San Diego, and we're going there right after we finish in San Francisco, and he'll be there for that.
Yeah. You wrote about the experience with your son.
I did,
and both sons and your relationship, which you're not with your partner at the time. And just tell me if this is too personal, we won't go into it, but I know
sure.
you had your son. It was born with your sperm and your ex-partner's sister's egg with
That's
a surrogate
right.
mother. Is that do I have that
That's
correct?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. And so, how does that play into you know, your feelings about fatherhood? Do you think?
Well, you know,
this is Father's Day weekend. I should
yes,
point out.
And of course, it's not too personal because I wrote a book about it. So how could it be too personal? But it is I think the first thing that comes to mind is the idea that gay people, people from the LGBT community who become parents in a very, very specific way. They want to be parents. They are very passionate about their relationship to children. They want to be parents. Luckily, many of us are able to become parents in this day and age, and we do so with great joy and with a great deal of hoops that one needs to jump through.
Not going to happen by accident.
It's not going to happen by accident. And that's how I initiated my Richie and I having children, is coming home and realizing after going to a family reunion that it was not going to happen by accident. I was like, oh my goodness, we've waited 10 years to do this thing we always talked about doing, but it has to. We have to actually initiate it. And I think that that initiation in many cases is a wonderful gift to the child. I think that it creates a parent that is truly wanting to do this thing, this rather large scale kind of thing. And I don't think it makes us all great parents automatically, of course, but I do think that it's a wonderful side effect of the difficulty of being a member of that community, community.
Yeah, and you really do, of course, have to think about it and want to do it.
You do, yeah.
Yeah. Got some email here. And by the way, let me just give out the phone number again if you'd like to talk with B.D. Wong about the Orphan of Zhao or his career or anything else. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email, it's forum@kqed.org, and you can also leave comments on our Facebook page. Lubov writes, I was lucky enough to attend the dress rehearsal the night before opening, and I was stunned by the performance. The actors flying through the bamboo scaffolding to indicate everything vertical from palace to mountain was thrilling. The entire audience was transfixed by the play. There were tears all around, including me. Please explain the tree in the cemetery. I think I understood it, but others did not. Thanks for a great performance.
Oh, wow.
This is at the end, I assume.
Yes, I think that the tree at the cemetery represents what happens in the end of the play is, without any spoilers, of course, is that Cheng Ying goes to visit his son's grave.
Many years after,
and he is at the cemetery looking for the grave, and he sees a tree that. I can relate to, because when we have gone to the cemetery to visit my grandparents, there's always a kind of sense of, well, wait, okay, now where is it? What part is it in? There's a certain cemetery that we go to where there things are all alphabetized, and yet there it's a kind of strange alphabetization because the cemetery continues to grow. You can't move them, and so there's always this. No, there was a tree. I remember that there was a tree, and so the tree in the ending scene represents that thing that he's looking for to know where the grave actually is. And he keeps returning to the tree because he's in an emotionally difficult place to try to continue to negotiate emotionally the feelings that he's having. And so what happens and what she's referring to, I'm not sure, is the notion that three times in the scene, he returns to the tree. It's almost like a kind of desire to start over and to reprocess the emotions in a more pleasant way than it is happening. It's so difficult for him to deal with what he's dealing with at that point in time in that scene. No spoilers. That he continues to go back to the tree.
Yeah. How do you prepare for a role like that? I mean, do you go back and look at history? What did you do to prepare yourself?
Michael Paller, who is the ACT dramaturg, put together a lot of really wonderful research that we were all given at the beginning of rehearsal, which is historical background, customs, actions, things that people do when they're of certain classes in that
stature
time.
Right.
Yes, stature. And lots of different things like that. Aside from that, there isn't a lot of historical research for me. The research is emotional, and the research is kind of looking into oneself. And it comes from the preparation from a daily from performance to performance is about me kind of getting into the world of the play. So I always sit backstage and listen to the play. I don't choose in this particular show to go back to the dressing room or anything like that. I sit with the other actors backstage, and that seems to help me immerse myself in the world, which is beautiful. I'm so glad she mentioned it. It is a beautifully physically rendered world in this production. It's a stunning production full of visual surprises and great lighting and costumes by Linda Cho, who just won the Tony Award on Sunday for Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. So beautiful costumes.
It's music, too.
And
some
wonderful
music
by Byron O. Young. Yeah.
I love the bowls of water.
Yes. One feature is that the actors do a lot of musical moments and sound effects with objects on the stage that they come on and off and you see in the kind of background. And so the play is a feast for the eyes, the production, and it's emotionally very powerful. And it's very rare that you get to see Asian material with Asian actors on stage. It's a problem that the ACT is taking on head on.
Oh. I want to ask you about that.
Yeah.
But our producer, Irina Gucci, is saying, explain the bowls of water.
Oh, the bowls of water are Byron O'Young is the composer and also the kind of overseer of the soundscape of the show. And the soundscape includes a lot of sound effects and musical effects that happen with the actors actually doing them on stage that you see. And one of those effects are two big glass bowls of water that you'll see on the set if you are looking around the set. And different effects that can be done with that water. There's a sound of rain that comes from the trickling water, but there's also the sound of musical sound of cymbals that are immersed in water that are being struck as they're being pulled out of the water, and their vibration is altered by the liquid. And it makes a very specific, different sound than the cymbal makes when you strike the cymbal without being immersed in water. And it's rather haunting and sonorously interesting sound. It's not a sound you can actually place.
And you get to see it. Because
and you can see the actor doing it, which is great.
Here's an email from Joe from Daly City who writes, in the early 70s, I was a college student working part-time at the Ortega Branch Library. I clearly recall Barry, Bradley, all siblings with initials BDW, if memory serves.
Correct.
And Mrs. Wong as regulars, such a nice family. Not much of a television viewer, so it wasn't until just a few years ago that I saw BD's name in a newspaper article. I'm glad he's doing so well.
That's very nice. You know, this is the great thing about this hometown experience is people coming out. Well, it sounds terrible of the woodwork, but you know, they're emerging from all different places. And as a matter of fact, two nights ago, this man came to the stage door and was the librarian at that library that I was at when I was 10 years old every day for the summer of my 10th year. And he was a huge part of my childhood, Emery Wu. And I hadn't seen him for maybe 50 years, you know, and 45 years. And he came 44 years, 43 years. Sorry, I always age myself up. I don't know why. And he came to visit, to see the show, and I saw him, and that was a wonderful reunion.
Yeah, that's great. You mentioned how unusual it is to work with an all-Asian cast. And as I was walking out when I saw the premiere this week, I was thinking back to Miss Saigon, you know, in 1991 and all the controversy around the casting of Caucasian actors, you know, in that play.
Yes.
How different are things now in that regard?
Well, they're not that different. And in case in point, this particular play was the world premiere of this play. We are doing the U.S. premiere of this play. The world premiere of this play was at the Royal Shakespeare Company, and it was under the same kind of controversial scrutiny that Miss Saigon production was in 1991. They used Royal Shakespeare Company actors. They were primarily Caucasian. They were in what we call full Chinese drag. And
why?
Their explanation is because they used members of the company, which is a very flimsy explanation, because they also did, I forgot what other play it was, a Russian play or something like that. And of course, the actors weren't Russian, but they justified it by saying they wanted to do the play, but they didn't want to bring Asian actors. They often use the excuse that people often use the excuse that there aren't enough Asian actors or that they aren't good. And we take great umbrage to that, of course. And so we are very proud to present this production with an Asian cast. And I think it's a bit of a statement. And the La Jolla Playhouse has joined with ACT to celebrate the Asian actors and to celebrate the material that originates from Asian sources. And it's also a matter of reaching out to the community, the Asian community, who are not famous for being theater goers. And that, of course, is very important to me to cultivate that audience. So I'm really grateful to Carrie and an ACT for putting a lot of effort into reaching out to that audience.
Let's see if we can get a call or two in. Let's go to Rosa in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hello?
Yeah, go on. Go ahead. You're on with B.
Hi, Rosa. Oh, dear.
I just want to say that I'm a big fan. I'm so sorry I screamed out like that. But I'm a big fan of B.D. Wong. I've been growing up watching Law and Order. I see Law and Order whenever I watch the show. I always thought that you were from a New York guy, you know? I always thought you were from New York City. I never thought that you were.
We'll take his answer off the air there, but it sounds like your cell phone's kind of breaking up. But sounds like she's from New York.
It sounds like she's from New York, and I think that's a great compliment. You know, we're supposed to be from New York in Law and Order, and we're supposed to seem like New Yorkers. And so if that was effective and conveyed successfully, I'm very happy. But no, I'm from San Francisco, and I was born and raised here, and very happily so, and very proud to be here to do this play and kind of reconnect with all of my San Francisco roots.
Do you find that the Law and Order role you played, was that many seasons you played?
11.
Actually, yeah. Do you still get people coming up to you, recognize you as the forensic psychiatrist?
Yeah, and I think that's the foundation for my fan base, and in some ways, as far as the numbers are concerned of the fan, you know, like when I'm on my Twitter feed, BD Wong_WONG, when I'm on that, I see there's a lot of traffic about Law & Order, and that's something that is it's great. I have no complaints about it. It's a wonderful part of my life.
Let's see if we can squeeze one more call in before the top of the hour. Michelle in San Jose, welcome.
Hi, this is Michelle Ehlers.
Michelle Ehlers.
Yes. Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Fabulous.
How do you know each other?
I had the great pleasure of working with him in M. Butterfly. Was one of the Peking Opera consultants, and got to see opening night and was fabulous.
Thanks.
Was wondering if you would just talk a little bit about the difference of taking on this role versus the role Song Liling in M. Butterfly.
Oh, thanks. You know, Michelle and her husband were the Peking Opera consultants. There was a Peking Opera boot camp. And, of course, we did not have Peking Opera boot camp, which was a big part of my M. Butterfly foundation. The training of that played a big part. The physical demands of that, or the things that I had to learn how to do or try to learn how to do that part in M. Butterfly, are not part of this. This is a pretty physical production. There's a lot of great fight scenes, and there's a lot of fight choreography, and there are aspects of it. But for me, this particular part is much more emotionally based, and much more. He seems more of a real person. You know, the other part is a very theatrical role. He is, of course, a real person in that role, but it's quite theatricalized. And so I'd say that the main difference is that this part is a part that feels more reliant on my instrument emotionally than the other one.
All right. BD Wong, he is starring in The Orphan of Zhao. It's showing at the Geary Theater through June 29th. It then moves down to the La Jolla Playhouse for another 4-week run, I think.
Yes,
thanks so
it
much.
Does.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you
for your great work. And,
thank you.
Appreciate all your candor and openness and chatting with
us. Yes, come see the play. It's beautiful. Thank you.
All right. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer today is Jim Bennett. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Scott Schaefer.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.